the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. We're live 8 to 10 on weekday mornings. We rebroadcast 8 to 10 on weekday evenings. We're heard on radio stations serving California and Oregon. And we're found online pretty much anywhere in the world at jeffexchange.org and ijpr.org and on the JPR app. It's Friday, June 28th, 2019. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. In this hour, an appreciation of the outdoors, one aimed at younger females. Eugene writer Ruby McConnell is standing by to talk about her book, A Girl's Guide to the Wild. You'll meet Ruby and hear about the book's contents and of Ruby's love for the outdoors shortly. And it is live. You can join the conversation by phone and email. We'll talk about how in just a moment. First, let's talk about the weather. Here's our student assistant, Randy Babbitt.
Thank you, Jeffrey. For the Southern Oregon Cascades and Siskiyous, today sunny with a high near 65, tonight mostly clear with a low around 37. In Yreka, today sunny with a high near 79, tonight mostly clear with a low around 48. In Mount Shasta and Weed, today sunny with a high near 74, tonight mostly clear with a low around 45. In Redding and Red Bluff, today sunny with a high near 88, tonight mostly clear with a low around 61. For the Klamath Basin, sunny with a high near 72, tonight mostly clear with a low around 44. For the Southern Oregon coast, today mostly sunny with a high near 67, and tonight mostly cloudy with a low around 50. On the Northern California coast, today mostly cloudy with a high near 57, tonight mostly cloudy with a low around 49. In Roseburg and the Umpqua Basin, today mostly sunny with a high near 77, tonight mostly clear with a low around 50. And in Grants Pass, Medford, and Ashland, today sunny with a high near 88, and tonight it's mostly clear with a low around 52. In Eugene and Springfield, today morning fog, mostly sunny with a high near 74, and tonight partly cloudy with a low around 51.
Thank you, Randy. The cool spell is coming to an end then, and we're returning much more to a pattern that we expect to have in late June and early July. It will be July on Monday, so we are just about there. But it was actually 70 degrees when I was driving home from work in the bright sunshine yesterday evening, and I briefly considered turning on the car heater in a summer afternoon. I didn't. I held off, and then I just closed the windows, turned off the air exchanger and that sort of thing. But it was surprisingly chilly the last couple of days. And so we're bouncing back from that pattern, about 5 degrees more today than yesterday, about 5 degrees more tomorrow than today. And by the 4th of July, I took a look out at what the forecast shows now. It might be 92 in Medford, 99 in Redding, and 80 in Eugene. So not super hot, but certainly hot, the way expected to be around the 4th of July, which is coming up next Thursday. Thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange. We always appreciate your time and attention and invite you to join our conversations here on the program. You can do that by calling 800-838-3760 if something moves you to comment or ask a question. You can also put your thoughts into an email and send that off to JX, just those two letters, jx@jeffnet.org. We're just getting into the season for outdoor activities, and we make our plans hoping it's not a big summer for fires and smoke. That issue aside, a little knowledge goes a long way for people considering spending more time outdoors. Our guest this hour wants to start that knowledge young. Ruby McConnell wrote a book for younger females called A Girl's Guide to the Wild, Be an Adventure-Seeking Outdoor Explorer. Ruby McConnell is a writer, geologist, environmental advocate, and frequent visitor to the woods. She describes herself as a proud daughter of Oregon country. She lives in Eugene. Her Twitter and Instagram handle is Ruby Gone Wild. Ruby, thanks for joining us on The Exchange today.
Thanks for having me.
So this is a follow-up to A Woman's Guide to the Wild. And when you wrote that, did you feel like there were still women reluctant to claim outdoor spaces for their own?
I felt like there was a desire, but there was maybe a gap in skill set, and there was definitely a gap in the outdoor community and the marketing.
Really? So the outdoor community marketing is still sort of, you know, rugged, manly sorts of things?
They're coming along.
Uh-huh.
Since the book came out, they've been coming along.
And the book was from 2016, is that
yes.
right? Yeah. So as someone who does love and spend a lot of time in the outdoors, how did you feel about what you found when you surveyed the masculine landscape?
I felt fine about it in terms of, people being outside and numbers. I felt Like there wasn't a lot of time and attention given specifically to women's needs in terms of equipment, which I think that recent news about NASA and the astronauts not having a suit
space
appropriate
suit, right,
for them bears out perfectly. That didn't surprise me at all. And I think that there's also some issues regarding just goals and the perspective for women's voices just not being represented in the literature. If you go and you look for an outdoor guide written by a woman and a woman's voice, it doesn't exist. And I think that's a gap in the bookshelf. I think that the female outdoor experience is unique and valid and should be represented.
What kind of response did that earlier book get?
It got a fabulous response. It got a loud and proud response, and a lot of relief from women that are that were well seasoned outdoors women going, ah, this book.
They were waiting for it.
They were waiting for it, mm-hmm. And there was also a very sort of visceral response to my honesty around particularly body issues. And just sort of and making of mistakes and being willing to address things like going to the bathroom that I had just sort of assumed no one was talking about. I guess I didn't know why. And I didn't have a problem being honest and forthright. And I think women found that very refreshing.
Did you have some book signings where people said, phew, I've always wondered how to do this, and you finally told me?
I had book signings that were like revivals with women and screaming and yelling and waving the book in the back and coming up and hugging me and saying, thank you so much, you know, and young women saying, you know, I my dad's an outdoors person and I want to be able, you know, my brothers are, and I feel like there are questions I have that they can't answer for me and it's keeping me from going outside, or I had this horrible, traumatizing, you know, summer camp experience and no one ever really sort of righted that for me. And now I feel like I have some tools and I can go out and, you know, just take care of yourself and be comfortable.
So a girl's guide to the wild seems like a natural thing. Was it pretty much assumed once you got these reactions from a woman's guide to the wild that you were going to then take this younger step?
It was for me. Yeah. Catch them early. Preventative medicine.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
So how different a process was this, given that you're writing for much younger readers?
This process was actually a lot easier. I felt better prepared for this book. I mean, I'd done it before. But I grew up going to summer camp and sort of those group younger, you know, kid activities. And
did you make wallets? Come on.
I didn't make wallets, but I did make sand candles.
Okay.
and tie-dye t-shirts. I think
okay,
I went
tie-dye,
to sort of
yes,
a more
of course, uh-huh.
liberal version. but yeah, it felt really natural to me and fun.
So, but the approach to the information has to be a little different, I would think, because you're working for a somewhat shorter attention span, I assume, if you're going for 9 to 12 readers, that sort of thing, and then trying to keep it interesting, hopscotching from place to place. It does move pretty fast. This book really moves from subject to subject very fast.
Yeah, it's and the idea is that it's both readable if you go through the book, but it's also a reference guide. So you can just flip through, and if you just want something to cook, or if you just want a day activity, or you're just looking for something related to your friends, you can find that. But people are sending me lots of pictures of girls reading this book cover to cover. It's really wonderful and super heartwarming, and I don't repost them because I don't post pictures of young people on social media. So.
Okay, I was going to ask you about that because I noticed the comment about people who were sending you pictures, but I didn't see the pictures, so that explains it. You're trying not to put young people's pictures out there without their consent.
Well, especially pictures of women. You know, there's quite a lot of discussion right now about the Instagram effect of how women are portraying themselves and encouraged to portray themselves in social media in the outdoors. And I am sort of more of the mindset of we should be sharing our experiences rather than images of ourselves.
So on that note, I mean, that's a cautionary tale, but there's also there's a caution in the front of this book. It's practically the first thing in the book is a note to parents about what?
Safety. Safety first. This book, the primary difference in my mind with the age group between writing for women and writing for young people is the responsibility around providing some life-saving skills. And there are life-saving skills in this book, which I try to make really clear that I am not the primary source for these life-saving skills. You know, for first aid, I try to give first aid information. I also try to make it clear that the best first aid training is actual first aid training and actual certification. And that's your responsibility. responsibility, even as a young person, to make sure that you're getting that from an appropriate source, not just from a book. This is experiential learning. You need to be with people always in the wilderness that have more experience than yourself, everyone, regardless of your age.
Always, always with somebody. Don't try to think that you got it from a book and then go out there and try it yourself.
Absolutely not.
Okay. Yeah. Good advice right there. We'll take a pause at the moment. Ruby McConnell, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is A Girl's Guide to the Wild. Be an Adventure-Seeking Outdoor Explorer. It's a follow-up to A Woman's Guide to the Wild. And Ruby is from Eugene. We can talk more about the book and take phone calls and emails from you when we come back to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 15. On the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Our guest is Ruby McConnell, an author who lives in Eugene. She has followed up her Woman's Guide to the Wild with the logical next step, which is to cast things a little younger for the 9 to 12 set. The latest book is called A Girl's Guide to the Wild, Be an Adventure-Seeking Outdoor Explorer. It's got all kinds of great information about the kinds of things you need to think about when you're planning to go outdoors and spend a lot of time there. We just got the major bit of information before the break, in case you missed it, which is always go outdoors with somebody more experienced than you. You can join our conversation with Ruby McConnell on the Jefferson Exchange, share stories about outdoor experiences and times you wish you might have had a book like hers along with you. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email jx@jeffnet.org. So for somebody like you who has clearly had a lot of enthusiasm for the outdoors for a very long time, how weird is it that you have to provide a why go outside explainer page in this book?
I think it's unfortunate, but given the digital age where screens have become our windows, I think it's necessary to sort of recast people to lift their heads and look out windows and step out into those spaces. Remember that first life is interesting as well as second virtual space.
Do you think the message is getting across? I mean, we've been talking about, you know, the indoor generation for so long now. It seems like by now some people have probably said, turn those things off and go outside.
I think it is getting across. I think that it's just as important for adults to continue to model spending time outdoors as it is for them to encourage children to do so without modeling the behavior.
Ah, so if dad's in the den watching sports and he tells the kids to stop playing their games and go outside, it's not the best example, perhaps.
Perhaps. Mm-hmm. And it's not the best choice for the adult either. You know, time outside is good for our mental and emotional and physical health, regardless of our age.
How young were you when you first started going outdoors yourself, Ruby?
I grew up in Oregon, so I think the answer is I was outside. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, I grew up near Mount Tabor Park in Portland, which at that point was sort of this huge, wild, forested place. My dad was a fisherman. My parents were birders. And it was sort of the era of, you know, okay, we're going to drive you to the coast, and it is January, and we will encourage you to go into the water because we're Oregonians and we are crazy, you know, like mm-hmm. up to your knees. That was how it was in the 80s.
I'm losing feeling in my toes just hearing the story. but so you were always there. It's like outdoors was just a place to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was. And I think that was the way of life in Oregon for a very long time, particularly in the 70s and 80s. That's why we have such great state parks and county parks and accessible trails and rails to trails programs. I mean, Oregon has preserved a lot of its space for outdoor recreation.
I want to make sure we get your six rules of the wild listed here, because they're right up front in the book, and it's on the same page as the why go outside. So the rules of the wild are ask permission, 1, 2, make a plan, 3, collect the right tools, 4, keep a positive attitude, 5, help others, 6, do no harm. All fairly straight up. Let's talk about the help others. I mean, what kinds of circumstances?
Every circumstance. So that applies to all of that. Help others in the preparation. Make sure that no one gets left behind. So every activity, especially if you're in a group with young people, should be a no-drop activity. You don't lose the slowest person in the group. Slowest person in the group is the person who sets the pace. You want to make sure that you don't leave behind the person with the smallest packet of joy that day either. You want to make sure that you bring them along in your joy and they don't get stranded emotionally. You want to make sure that psychologically everybody's in line. You know, if everyone, in order for everyone to pay attention, which is a great way of staying safe, you have to make sure that everyone is being brought along psychologically and emotionally and in terms of food. So
very egalitarian, something you all do together. And how do you express this in this book?
So there's an entire chapter sort of about groups, troops, and sisterhoods and how to get along with people. Particularly, we ask our young people to go outside in groups more than we ask our adult people to do so. Once you sort of reach a certain age, then you're allowed to go outside looking for some degree of solitude. But until you've reached that age, you're asked to do that in a peer group, often not of your choosing. And that can be fraught, as we know. So, you know, you want to have some strategies, and one of those strategies is to share. A great way to start making friends and to get along is to be expansively generous.
Share the experience by all means. You're giving readers some aspirations in the book, too, and it's not just national parks, I noticed, but World Heritage Sites. Have you traveled to some of them yourself? Many of them? All of them?
Certainly not all of them. There's just so many. But they're the international equivalent of national parks, and they're spectacular places, and often they're places in need of more funding. And sometimes there are places in need of less visitors. We always want to be careful of that, too, and travel responsibly. But I think that encouraging international travel in the internet age is very important because it gives us firsthand experiences and it creates empathy and it influences the way that we accept people with differences from ourselves in a really positive way.
Is the book a bit of a throwback in some ways, Ruby? I mean, because you got crafts in here, including paper mache, which I don't think I've seen recipes for in a very long time, to build your own adventure globe and to decide places you want to go in the world.
Yeah, it's a huge throwback. It's analog. It's totally a throwback. It's so old school. I mean, when I was doing the research for the Girls Guide, one of the things that I did was go back to all of the original Girl Scout and Campfire and guidebooks back, you know, to the turn of the 20th century and read every version that sort of came out to reorient myself to what the current literature, you know, what have girls been being told about what their experience in the outdoors can be and should be, and what should that experience be in the 21st century, and how non-digital can I make it?
So every page, it seems like, has something different. Was that kind of the pace of those guidebooks from the early 20th century, too, the idea that, you know, you keep moving along with subject matter?
It's about doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's about doing and doing in a tactile way and experiencing the world in a way that, again, is heads up and more than thumbs.
Ruby McConnell, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Her book is called A Girl's Guide to the Wild. And I want to ask about the usual run of outdoor activities for you now in your adult life. I mean, have you thru-hiked the Pacific Crest Trail or anything like that?
I have not thru-hiked the Pacific Crest Trail. I was a geologist by trade, so I spent a lot of time in the Grand Canyon and the Trans-Mexican Volcanic Belt. I did a lot of backpacking in my younger days. I am decidedly middle-aged at this point, and I do a lot of day hiking. And I do less backpacking and less sort of, I don't like to hurtle through space or water.
You don't like to hurtle through space or water? Okay. That makes sense.
That's my limit. Uh-huh. I don't go hurtling. I'm a slower pace than I used to be in a lot of aspects of my life. And that manifests itself outdoors too. And that's a tenet that I tell women and girls to think about. Who you are outside is very similar to who you are inside. And it's okay to honor that. So if you're someone who likes to read inside, you might like to sit and read outside too. And that's a valid use of your time outside.
Were you ever a hurtler?
Not really.
No.
I did some rafting. That mm-hmm. was about as fast as I got. Never mm-hmm. really a skier, which I know is devastating to people from this region who are big time cross-country skiing. But I'm not really into hurtling through space.
All right. So enjoy the outdoors. Take your time at it. You mentioned groups already. And speaking of groups, there are profiles in the book. And Juliet Gordon-Lowe is one of the first profiles. What group is she known for?
The Girl Scouts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And you know, that it's such an important group. There was no way to write this book and not pay some sort of huge tribute to that group, which has been so influential in getting girls outdoors. And also, this is a STEM book, you know, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, and they have really pushed STEM for girls in recent years, and they've been really good about that. And so I felt like there was no way to write this book and not sort of say there's a heritage here.
It's impressive when you think about Juliet Gordon-Lowe and the time in which she proposed what she was proposing, which I'm sure shocked the people like, what, you can't take girls out of doors, that sort of thing.
Yes. But the original Girl Scout books, you know, do say that some scouting activities are unsuitable for girls, and they encourage that every girl learn to cook the 7 basic soups. And this is a thing now. When I do book events for women, I say, let's see if this group of women can name the 7 basic soups. And we've yet to have a group. We're all mystified. I still don't know what they are. No, we were hard pressed. In the 21st century, the 7 basic soups could be anything. It's a mystery to us.
Well, I think we have the subject matter for your next book anyway, the 7 basic soups by Ruby McConnell. Ruby McConnell's current book is called A Girl's Guide to the Wild, subtitled Be an Adventure-Seeking Outdoor Explorer. So it's very much focused at a 9 to 12 reading group of young women. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. And let's welcome in a call from Carter in Golden. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ruby McConnell.
Yes, good morning, and thanks for this book. It sounds like something that's really needed for strengthening our society.
Thank you.
I'm calling from the Golden Heritage Site, which is just east of Wolf Creek, Oregon, and about 17 miles north of downtown Grants Pass, exit 76 on I-5. And I've just learned that the state of Oregon Parks and Recreation Department has 195, almost 200, of these heritage sites maintained by the Parks and Recreation Department of Oregon around the state of Oregon. So I commend this program to what we're listening to.
All right. Thanks, Carter, for calling. Are you going all the way up to the top of King Mountain as long as you're on Coyote Creek today?
The road and up to King Mountain now is not as well maintained as it was 15 years ago, so we don't go up there very often anymore.
Okay. Well, thanks for sharing your story and letting us know about some of the heritage sites in Oregon. So, well, there's another way you could branch out. There's all kinds of things to write about when you're talking about getting outdoors in Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's a beautiful part of the country. They're sort of located right by the Applegate Trail, too, and there's a lot of good history preserved as well as really some beautiful hiking.
I want to come back and talk more about some of the people profiled in the book. You tweeted recently of Mary Anning, and what is she known for?
She sells seashells by the seashore.
She does know why she created that phrase.
The tongue twister is written about Mary Anning. She was a famous fossil collector in the south of England long ago, and at a time when there wasn't industry for women, and there wasn't a lot of ways for young women, especially that came from big families that were low income, to help subsidize that. And so she started a cottage industry selling fossils and was well known amongst scientific academies and scientists, although not recognized as a scientist for most of her life, nor compensated in that way. But she's responsible for a lot of what we know about the fossil record.
Wow. That's impressive. Mm-hmm. But does she come up in the book partly because of, well, obviously because of the geology work, but I mean, there's also a lot of games in the book, and is tongue twisters part of those?
Well, that was part of it. It was a hat tip to that, but it's also, I am a geologist by trade, and I wanted to make sure that I snuck as much geology into the book as possible. But yeah, the books, you know, outdoor activities often come with a long, arduous, boring car ride with siblings that you may or may not be pleased to be trapped with, and parents that may or may not be looking at their phone or singing a song, or someone that you feel like playing 20 questions with. So you got to do something.
Okay, ways to pass the time. So, but this is on the way, or when you get those slow moments in camp,
or if it rains and you maybe get stuck inside a tent, or you know, if you're waiting for your family to get things sorted and together.
I'm getting a sense that your mind is always thinking about alternatives. I mean, just other possibilities, things that can go right, but also things that can go wrong and how you'll be prepared for those. And it sounds like that your time outdoors has really gotten you well prepared for thinking in those terms. It's like, okay, well, if we do this, this might happen. If we do that, that might happen.
Yeah, you have to be flexible. I think that, what we're seeing at Mount Everest, we're learning that again and again and again, where, you get into danger when you become singularly focused on achieving one particular goal. If your goal in the outdoors is to enjoy yourself or to come home safely, you may make a different set of decisions based on the information that you're given than if your goal is to summit or to complete a trail. So I try to avoid that kind of conquering goal-based advocacy in the outdoors because I feel like people can get more fixated on the accomplishing whatever task they set to themselves than having a good time or safety.
I was just checking back to see if you addressed those in your Rules of the Wild, and there it is in number 6, do no harm. And so when you talk about leaving your tent and you and 50 people do the same thing up on Mount Everest, that's not doing no harm to the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So lots of stuff to think about when you head outdoors. When you encounter, there's a section of the book that deals with creatures that are not people in the outdoors. I mean, some you avoid, some you come a little near. But I was really taken by by one of the other crafts involving other critters, which is the fish trap. Tell us about the construction of the fish trap.
A fish trap is the coolest, easiest thing in the whole world. and it's a delight, I think, for adults, too. So it's basically 32-ounce bottles that are cut in half and stuck together. And you make a funnel that the fish, you stick into the water and the fish swim in. But because you have cheesecloth on the end, they can't swim back out of. And you can put the cap on and lift it up. And so all those little like tadpoles and little itty bitty things you can kind of pick up, and you have like a homemade fish tank. And then hopefully you put them back in the water before they become distressed.
So it's meant to be just sort of a temporary, like, hey, let's look at the fish for this moment and then put them back where they were.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Let's part two of the book gets into the basics of spending time outdoors, and this is where you get into things like what to pack and that sort of stuff. I mean, what are some of the minimums that you want to let people know that they should be taking when they go out to the wild?
Toilet paper.
That's a great place to start.
That's the place I always start. Yeah.
Any particular kind of toilet paper? For the folks who aren't used to camping and they might not be around improved toilets, what should they be bringing?
Toilet paper. It doesn't matter. Toilet paper is a joy to have in a pocket. Put it in every pocket. Put it in a pocket of everything that you bring with you. Leave wads of toilet paper and plastic bags scattered throughout your life so that you are never without toilet paper, and you will simply not worry as much as you used to. It's like a huge portion of people's concern in the outdoors has to do with whether or not you remembered to bring toilet paper. It's a simple fix.
I get the sense by the size of your eyes at this moment that perhaps there are times when you have discovered that you had run out of pockets that contain toilet paper.
Well, I have a story about summer camp when I was in a teen adventure camp that was designed to teach you outdoor skills. And we were there for several weeks. And the goal was we would work our way up to being able to plan our own 3 or 4 day backpacking trip in the Oregon Coast Range. And we did this, and our counselor's name was Bubba Nut, and Bubba Nut was wonderful, and we did fire training and trust exercises, and we packed our whole thing up and basically drove out and got to the trailhead, and we're going to be out there for 3-4 days, and we're all excited, and we've got all our stuff, and he says, "You sure you have everything?" We're like, yeah, Bubba Nut, we're totally ready. He's like, "You sure you have everything?" "Yeah, let's go. Let's get out of the van. Come on, man, let's go." And he's like, "Who has the toilet paper?" And there's 13 of us, and the van was silent. And people's chins started to quiver. And like the fear was palpable because we're like 13, 14-year-old kids, and Bubba Nut had the toilet paper, but yeah.
So Bubba Nut had backstopped you.
Of course, he wouldn't let us. But that's all you need is that one moment of where's the toilet paper?
So the teen adventure camp with Bubba Nut, was that overall a good experience?
It was great. It was through Westwind on the Oregon coast. It's a beautiful, beautiful place.
So is the book in some ways an homage or at least a recapitulation of stuff that happened at that point in your life?
Some of that. I started going to Westwind for summer camp when I was 9 years old and continued until I was in my 20s because I ended up working at outdoor school at Westwind. So that site is close to my heart. Every part of that is sort of an homage to Westwind and also to Outdoor School, which is a wonderful Oregon-based program that everyone gets to participate in.
We will talk more with Ruby McConnell about A Girl's Guide to the Wild that is aimed at 9 to 12-year-old readers and girls, obviously. So we'll talk into some more specifics about the kinds of things you take, including lots and lots of toilet paper in every pocket. When we come back to the Jefferson Exchange, you can join us by phone and email. We got a call on the line, and it looks like an email in the box. And we'll come back and take those when we return to the Jefferson Exchange in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're having a visit to the outdoors in a sense. Okay, one step removed, really, with Ruby McConnell, who's a Eugene writer and geologist and environmental advocate. And she spends a lot of time in the outdoors. She hit it big with a book called A Woman's Guide to the Wild and decided to follow that up with a book more focused on 9 to 12-year-olds called A Girl's Guide to the Wild, subtitled Be an Adventure-Seeking Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about general ideas about how to go outside. And if you have some specific concerns or issues for young women in your life, join us on the Jefferson Exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone. Emails jx@jeffnet.org. Speaking of phones, you mentioned that phones should be a part of the gear that you take on outdoor adventures. But for what kinds of uses? I mean, we're not talking about sitting there, you know, playing Urban Warrior or whatever.
I would hope not. No, they serve all sorts of safety purposes, first and foremost, to communicate. And granted, you can't rely on your reception, so you do have to be very, very careful. You don't want to use it as a primary map, but you do have an extra flashlight. You do have a way of signaling. You do have a way of calling for help if you can get to a road or someplace that has signal service. You also can download apps that are magnifying. You can download apps that teach you about the sky and that are field guides and do plant identification and are microscopes. There's all sorts of great things that you can do.
I have heard this before, though, that don't depend upon your phone to be your map and your compass, and don't depend on it to always have service. So the things that you need from the mm-hmm. phone that require service, make sure that you have another backup with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So and then I want to get into clothing briefly, too, because let's start at the bottom. What kinds of shoes do you recommend?
You should wear, well, it depends on the time of year. The idea is to wear appropriate shoes for the terrain. So we go back to the basic rules of plan ahead. You need to actually have a sense of what your terrain is going to be. Sometimes you can go in hiking sandals. My only real thing is nothing with a heel. And please stop wearing your flip-flops outside.
Are people getting injured by having their flip-flops outside?
Flip-flops are really dangerous because you can turn an ankle because they're not really attached to your foot. And they'd have a tendency of falling apart. So if you want to come back out with both of your shoes, something that is actually attached to your foot, and then, you know, in general, closed-toed shoes.
Closed-toed. Okay, yeah, big one there. There's a line in here about black socks. Was that just a joke?
It's just a joke.
Because black socks just get blacker
every
day.
They just get dirtier and dirtier. Doesn't matter. Take them. If you want to feel clean, wear black socks. You won't see them get dirty.
Let's take some input from our listeners here. We have an email from Roger, no town given. He says, my 16-year-old daughter is signed up for a 5-day chaperoned wilderness hike in a month. She's never been backpacking and may be the only female. Any special needs or suggestions in being the only girl? Also, training to hike with a 30-pound pack? That, again, from Roger, somewhere in Southern Oregon. Thanks for writing, Roger.
Yeah, I mean, if she's never been out before, the number one thing is going to be make sure that she's used all of her gear before she goes out. The very best place to pitch your tent or to, you know, practice packing your backpack is in your living room before you go. Same thing of your boots. Make sure that you can carry all of that weight. Make sure that you can carry it for a long period of time. So a practice hike is really going to be the best thing. In terms of being the only girl, smile. It's fine. You're going to be just fine. Pick a different tree in a different direction than from when there you go, when you stop. Everything will be okay. Speak up and don't allow yourself to get hazed, and you're not going to attract bear.
Not going to track bear.
Okay. You're not going to track bear.
Let's get into that one, because this I'm glad you addressed that, even in this book for 9 to 12-year-old girls, who, of course, are just at that point in life when they're beginning to menstruate. The whole idea of menstruation attracting bears is?
A fallacy. It's completely false. And it is a way, historically, when I wrote the Woman's Guide, and I think even in the Women's Guide, I say it's sort of it's a form of outdoor hazing towards women. But my attitude towards that, I've been educated a little bit. And part of what it is hazing. And sometimes it's men stepping into a protector role. You could be threatened by bear. And if that is true, I am here to protect you from that bear. Sometimes it's actually well-intentioned The overall effect is that it prevents women from wanting to go outside because they think that they're attracting bear, and they're not. The morning bacon will attract bear.
Big time. Big time, yes. I've heard many stories about the bacon stuff. Yeah, okay. Well, thank you for setting us straight on that one. We've had reminders from previous guests as well. A couple of phone calls here. Let's go to Daniel in Arcata. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ruby McConnell. A Girl's Guide to the Wild is her book.
Hey, Ruby. My name's Dan Bixer from Arcata. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, I started the a troop of the Baden-Powell Service Association here in Arcata called the 124 Redwood Rangers. Most of our leaders are women and biologists and oceanographers and stuff. And I'm just wondering, did you research the Baden-Powell Service Association? I know it's really big in Oregon, and it's only about 7 or 8 years old in the United States.
You know, I didn't. I know nothing of it, so I'm happy to be educated.
Oh, so it's based basically on Baden-Powell's original, thought of scouts. And then, you know, somewhere in the late 30s, early 40s, it became male and female throughout the world. And then about 7 years ago, it started here in the United States, and it's mixed. Anybody's allowed, gay, transgender, male, female. And it's actually from 5 years old is the otter, all the way through rovers, so you could be 99 years old and be an adult leader as well, female or male.
Oh, that's great.
So is this what used to be called Girl Guides?
No, it's just a new type of scouts. It's based off of Baden-Powell's writings in the late 30s, where he integrated it all.
This is Robert Baden-Powell we're talking about.
It's a new type of scouts.
Robert Baden-Powell we're talking about?
That's right. Yep. Okay. It started in 1907, and I think his sister started the Girl Scouts in 1910, I believe.
All right, yeah. Agnes founded the Girl Guide Girl Scout movement, I see. Yeah, okay. Robert Baden-Powell. Thanks for...
something to check out. It's got boys and girls in it, and I started it because, you know, I have two daughters, and I wanted them to be, like you say, a little more adventurous outdoors and a little bit more equal to males instead of, you know, feeling like they have to do less.
That's great.
Thanks for that, Daniel. Appreciate that. You talk about the Girl Scouts just a little bit in the book. I mean, do you have any particular feelings about mixing of groups and who goes along, and as long as everybody's respecting themselves and the environment?
No, I don't. I think let me say, you know, this book has a gender binary in the title, but I think that it's a little behind its time, and I consider myself kind of the political cleanup crew on this one. And I tried to take the broadest possible definition of girl in the 21st century. So I would really like the title to be A Girl's Guide to the Wild, and anyone who identifies or likes girls or finds this book helpful or just wants to know how to build a fire, Guide to the Wild.
Okay, I think I can see why you had to restrict it to A Girl's Guide to the Wild, at least in length.
Yes.
All right, very good. Let's take a call from Prescott in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Ruby McConnell.
Hello there.
Hi.
Okay. I just wanted to do a little follow-up on the toilet paper thing.
Oh, yeah?
Because I do a lot of camping. I travel all over the place from southern Utah, all over the West Coast. One of the things you see everywhere is toilet paper everywhere. And so what I do, and I'm sure this is probably covered in your book, Ruby, the pack it in, pack it out thing, but I just always carry one quart Ziploc bags everywhere I go. They're in my backpack, they're in my truck, everywhere. It's an easy way, they're compact, they seal off so you can put it in your backpack and it's totally sealed. To just remind everybody that toilet paper needs to be packed out and not left behind.
Yep, super important. And I think I try to say that every time, that it's, you can't just bring the toilet paper, you have to bring a plastic bag with you. And that plastic bag is always to pack it out. And it's not just toilet paper, it is wrappers, it is the peels from your oranges and your bananas. All of those things, everything's got to come back out. And in fact, everything that the people in front of you left behind should come out with you too.
So clean up after the other people as well.
Absolutely.
Make it cleaner than you found it.
Absolutely.
I'm glad you brought up the orange peels and the banana peels, because we've talked about that recently where, you know, well, it's biodegradable. My father used to say that when he tossed his cigarette filters into the Hudson River. Thanks, Dad. The fact is that there are things that may be, in fact, biodegradable, but still are not natural for that environment and can have effects that are not anticipated.
Yes. And if I can take this moment to say, if you have a dog and you bother to pick up your dog's poop and put it into a bag, we would all love it if you would carry that bag off the trail with you. I would say the vast majority of the litter that I'm seeing on trails these days is dog poop in bags.
So they took the trouble to bag it.
And then they leave it along the trail.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just turning into a pet peeve. And I would like to just plead with people to take it out all the way.
Okay. When we get to the part of A Girl's Guide to the Wild where you talk about setting up camp, I found myself smiling at the section about making your campus, your camping place, home away from home. What kinds of things do you do to get that sense of homeness to it?
Well, so light. Let's start with light, especially for young people, because so much of what we do in the outdoors is face fears. And at night, those fears come closer and closer and closer. So one of the ways that we can make sure that we continue to feel brave as night falls is to cast light, you know? And it's a very basic way of hanging out with people, is around a campfire and around a lantern. And it brings us close and it creates community, which is part of the reason we go outside. Sometimes it's to get away from people. Sometimes it's to create bonds with people. So all of those things that tie into community, light, food, having really good nourishing food that makes our bodies lifts our spirits and makes, you know, us feel good. And then having a really comfortable place to sleep. Don't scrimp on that. It's important, especially if you want to be dynamic and active during the day and continue to be brave. You need to feel like your body is going to be there with you.
Well, about food, and particularly if you're backpacking, I mean, how do you recommend finding the right balance of nutrition and portability?
Well, how long are you going to be there? Is the first thing. I think a lot of people feel like, you know, A, we're not going to space.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of times, you know, if you forget something, you can drive back out at the trailhead, you know, or how long are you really going to be there? How much food do you really need? And I break a lot of the rules with backpacking. I bring fresh fruit. I cook really extravagant meals for the first day and hike it in and eat happily. Well, I'll bring in lasagna.
The cooking is done before you get out on the trail, you're saying?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. If you're not going to be out, you know, if you're going to be there for several weeks, then sure, you need to, you know, start thinking about some dehydrated things. But if there's a lot of people, or even if there's just a few people and you're planning on putting that weight out of your backpack and into your belly really soon, you can eat pretty luxuriously. You know, and you're going to burn a lot of calories if you're backpacking. Bring chocolate. Bring things that make you feel happy and well and nourished. It's okay.
Do you really bring cinnamon bun dough into the woods?
I've been known to bring some strange things. I have a friend that still contacts me years later going, you brought mangoes. I went hiking with you and you brought a mango to the most inappropriate place and it was sticky and it was messy. And it was wonderful. And you had to carry the big pit out and you brought mangoes. I'm like, yeah, mangoes are delicious and refreshing.
I don't know why I get fixated on the cinnamon bun thing, but you put it on sticks and put it over the fire?
Yeah, well, especially if you're car camping. So you wrap it around, it turns into a cinnamon twist, you know? And then you put like some extra sugar and you crackle that on top and it sort of caramelizes in the fire. I mean, who doesn't want to eat something that's cooked on a stick? Don't limit yourself to marshmallows. Cook it all on a stick. The more you cook on a stick, the less dishes you have to do. And that makes everybody happy. And everybody can participate, you know?
There's a great section here about building a traveler stove and burner. And I want to talk about some of the things you can cook on there. Brown bag eggs and bacon are in the food section.
Yeah, you put it in. you put it in and it cooks, you know, you put the eggs and the bacon in and, you know, like some butter if you want to really have it be delicious and not catch on fire quickly. basically. And then you put it over the heat and it cooks inside the bag with its own juices. And it's just, and it's fun. And, you know, anytime you can get young people participating in every aspect of the outdoors, that's when they're going to take ownership of it. If they're just passengers, if they don't set up the tent, if they don't carry their own weight, if they can't help with the meals, then they're not actually participating and they're not learning resiliency and they're not learning that they can take care of themselves. And those are the skills that you take into the rest of your life and make you a strong, dynamic, powerful woman.
So thanks to your mom and dad, certainly, for exposing you to the outdoors all those times, huh?
Yeah.
So given who you're writing for, do you expect the ebook to outsell the physical one?
I have no idea. No, I don't think so. I think it's a great gift book. What we're finding is that this book sells in gift stores and in gateway communities and in places where I think that men are buying this book. I hope that men, that father that just called in, I hope that men feel like this is a book that they can bring for their daughters.
Did you have as much fun writing this as it can be to read it?
Yes. More than that. It took me decades to learn how to do all of this, and it was fun the whole time.
Ruby McConnell, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a Eugene author. She followed up A Women's Guide to the Wild with A Girl's Guide to the Wild. Thank you so much for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Good to have you here. That'll do it for today's exchange. We're online at jeffexchange.org. The program is followed in the morning by The Takeaway. Our evening rebroadcast is followed by news from the BBC. The program is produced by John Baxter and April Ehrlich of JPR News. Student assistant Randy Babbitt is at the controls today. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. Please join us next time on the Jefferson Exchange and have a great weekend. Don't call them eels. Lamprey start Monday's Jefferson Exchange. A Yurok biologist found a new subspecies. Later in Hour 1, how to help your mechanic diagnose your car trouble in the squeaky wheel. In Hour 2, Building Empathy with the author of The War for Kindness. That's on Monday's Jefferson Exchange. This morning's program airs again from 8 to 10 this evening on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio.
Welcome to As It Was, Tales from the Mythical State of Jefferson. Ashland historian Jeff Leland has traced the convoluted naming of Mount McLaughlin, the dominant landmark of southern Oregon's Rogue Valley. Fur trader Peter Skeen Ogden displaced indigenous names in 1827 with Mount Sestis after the Sestis or Shasta Indians to the south. Ogden also named the Pitt River east of today's Mount Shasta after pits dug by Indians to capture elk, but Ogden skipped naming that mountain. Mapmakers called it Pitt Mountain until mapping errors transposed the names, showing present-day Mount McLaughlin as Mount Pitt, with one or two letter T's, and the volcanic peak in Southern California as Mount Shasta. Early settlers variously called the mountain east of Medford, Oregon, Mount Pitt, Snowy Butte, Big Butte, and Mount Clearview. The Oregon legislature confirmed Mount McLaughlin in 1905, named for Dr. John McLaughlin, the Hudson's Bay Company agent, since christened the Father of Oregon. An attempt in the 1930s to rename it Mount Adams, after President John Quincy Adams, didn't stick. Yes, it's complicated, Leland says in the Southern Oregon Historical Society Quarterly, and concludes, "We can all agree that its snow-capped peak remains a stunning landmark when viewed from our valley." Today's episode of As It was written by Kernan Turner and produced by Raymond Scully. I'm Shirley Patton. To share stories or to learn more about the series, visit asitwas.org.